May I speak with Gordon Jones, please?
May I ask who's calling?
Brent Kelly.
Brent Kelly?
Yes.
Hello.
Gordon.
Yeah.
This is Brent Kelly. I wrote you a week or 10 days ago asking about an interview.
You wanted to call on the telephone?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Is this a good time?
Yeah, it should be all right.
Okay. Thank you. Let me tell you first, I really appreciate this. And I'll tell you a side effect, which most people don't seem to mind, but some people do. You will have an increase in the number of autograph requests for a period of, two or three or four weeks after this appears. So if that's a problem, please tell me.
Well, I don't mind getting them in the mail and signing them.
Good. Okay. Well, that's usually, fellas tell me they get all 8 or 10 requests a week, and all of a sudden it goes to 4 or 5 a day for a period of a couple, 3 weeks. Okay, I will ask you, a dozen questions, I guess. And if you would please just answer as long or short as you want to, and if anything you choose not to answer, just don't answer it.
All right.
You joined the Cardinals in August of 54. After you started in AA, went to AAA, and came up, and you met with little resistance from the major league hitters. An excellent start. How do you account for that? How did you do so well?
Well, I had good control, I was pitching very well at into the middle part of the year at Omaha, and when I came up, I got right into the rotation and pitched regularly. I was just getting the ball in real good spots.
Your earned run average was the lowest in the National League for anybody who pitched over 11 innings. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew. I only needed, I needed a few more innings to qualify for the earned run title, but it was the lowest in the National League.
Yeah, by quite a bit, actually, too. Two shutouts. Do you recall them?
Yeah.
Who were they?
They were, one was against Pittsburgh, and one was against Milwaukee.
Uh-huh.
And the one against Pittsburgh, we won 13-0. And it was an easy game as far as our score was concerned. The other one was against Milwaukee. It was 4-0, I think, and I beat Jim Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And he pitched a no-hitter that year and was 8-0 at the time, I think.
He was a very good pitcher for a few years there.
Yeah, he had an excellent year that year. In fact, I started in that season against Milwaukee 3 or 4 games.
Mm-hmm.
Spahn, I pitched against Spahn, Burdett, and Wilson.
That's some pretty tough competition. The Cardinals that year hit the ball, excellent hitting team, but they seemed to be pretty low on pitching, but then they got you, and you pitched so well, and they didn't score for you. Well, the 13 runs, I guess they're scoring for you there, but most of the time you were pretty tight ball games.
That's true. We it just seemed like, well, almost every time I started, I pitched against the other team's ace. I pitched against the Dodgers, I pitched against Erskine, and I pitched against the Giants twice, both times against Antonelli.
Mm-hmm.
I pitched against Milwaukee, and I got Spahn, Burdett, Wilson, as I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to work out that way.
You pitched, you had 4 complete games, but you had almost 8 innings per start.
Almost every game I pitched, pitched well into the deep end of the game.
Yeah, just an outstanding start. Well, go back a few years. Who signed you? Did the Cardinals sign you originally?
Yeah, the Cardinals signed me, and a scout named Ken Penner was the scout that signed me here in the Sacramento area, and he was the Western regional head scout for the Cardinals. He just happened to live in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the one who signed me here.
Well, you were in Fresno in 50. Where were you in 49?
I was also at Fresno.
Okay.
I signed out of junior college in 49 in about the 1st of July, I believe, was sort of last couple of days in June, or the first, yeah, I think it was about 26th of June, if I remember right, somewhere around there. And I went to Fresno, and I was 6-4 at Fresno for the rest of that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next year, I came back and pitched a complete year, the whole year, in 50 at Fresno.
12 wins, is that right?
Yeah, I was 12 and 16.
And you struck out 200 batters.
Yeah, that led the league.
Yeah, big year. Then Uncle Sam beckoned. Did you play ball in the service?
Yes, I did. And that was probably the real turning point as far as my control. You remember, in 50, I had 200 strikeouts and led the league in strikeouts, but I also had 150 walks.
Yeah, you had your first couple of years, you were walking about 5 for 9 innings, I believe.
Yeah, and then when I came back, while I was in the service, I knew I had to improve my control, and I did. I was able to pitch a lot in the service. In fact, I averaged about, I had 93 wins in the 3 years I was in.
Holy mackerel.
So I won over 30 games a year in the service. And I pitched every third or fourth day, and we played long seasons. And, of course, that included not only the league, but all the exhibition and
right.
Other games that we played.
Okay.
Years in the Bay Area, and then I played 1 year in Hawaii.
Where were you stationed in the Bay Area?
At Alameda.
Okay. I grew up in Los Altos, so I was around there. I remember the first time I was a little kid. That's when you joined the Cardinals, and I was, there's something psychological, I guess, about why somebody chooses somebody as a favorite, but for some reason you became a favorite of mine, maybe because you were doing well or something. And I remember going up to Seal Stadium when you joined the Giants. I was 16 then, and I think I went something like 5 days in a row before you finally pitched.
Yeah, I was in the bullpen then.
Well, what about that? You were at Phoenix. You were one of the top two or three pitchers in the Coast League, 13 wins. They called you up and put you in the bullpen. Was this to be expected?
I'd started the season in Phoenix as a starter.
Right.
And I'd gone off to like a 2-6 start. And I wasn't pitching that bad, but I run into that one bad inning and lose ball game. So what happened was, they had a pitcher named Joe Shipley that was our short man in the bullpen.
Right.
And the Giants called him up. And so Red Davis, the manager, said, well, I've got to have a short man in the bullpen, and Gordy, I'm going to put you in the bullpen. I had pretty good control. And so I said, all right. And that's when I went in. I was 2-6, and I think I was 13-7.
13-7 when they called you up, right?
So I went 11-1 in the bullpen.
Wow!
And that's when they called me up.
Well, you came up. You did make a start for the Giants, and you won it.
Yeah, I started on Labor Day. We had a doubleheader. We had a split doubleheader on Labor Day, and we were a little short on pitching. So Rigney asked me if I could start, and I said sure. And he said, well, all I want is 5 innings, and it was against the Dodgers, and he said, so as it worked out, I went out with a 5-4 lead, or I think it was 5-4. We ended up winning the game, I think, 8-4.
That was, you had a good, well, you were up, about a little over a third of the season, is that right?
Probably about a third of the season, yeah. I think
yeah.
About the first two-thirds I was down. I was 3-1 or 3-2.
3-1 with a 2.37 ERA.
Yeah.
Yeah. You spent the next year with the Giants. They traded you to Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about going to the other league?
Well, I was very happy to be in San Francisco, naturally, because I was close to home.
Right.
And I'd had another pretty good year with San Francisco, and I was kind of excited about staying in San Francisco, so I was a little taken back, you know, that I was traded, but you know, that was, at that time, that was just part of baseball. You had to accept it.
Right.
And happened in, you know, just before Christmas. So I was traded early in December. And I was kind of a little upset because with the Giants, because I found out from our local television announcers that called me at home to tell me that I was traded.
Oh, boy.
And normally speaking, the club should contact the player and let him know before he releases the press.
Yeah, that would seem to be.
Anyway, it worked out, you know, fine as it was. Richards was very good to me, and as my career progressed, and even after I left Baltimore, he got me back with Houston.
Well, you spent 2 years with Houston, then you ended up coaching for them for 2 years.
Right.
Were you the pitching coach?
Yes.
They had some awfully good young arms there at that point.
Yeah, we did. We had a great staff, and the staff I had in '66 really developed. Mike Cuellar went from being just a less than .500 pitcher to being a Cy Young Award winner.
Mm-hmm.
After he went over to Baltimore, and it was because he got his screwball under control. He tried to throw his screwball so hard, and we convinced him that he had a much better screwball if he threw it as an off-speed pitch, and he slowed that down, and we also convinced him that he had a good fastball, and he kind of refused to throw his fastball for strikes, and he tried to throw his screwball too hard, and he reversed those two, and he started to, his strikeouts went up dramatically, and his wins did too, along with it.
He was a super pitcher for several years.
Yeah, and he continued to pitch that way. He had all the pitches, and he just he was a nibbler, and he'd get himself in trouble, and then once they just could look for his fastball. But when they had to start looking for his breaking stuff, then his fastball got about 5 miles faster.
Mm-hmm. You had, Dierker and Wilson, too,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, with John Wilson and Larry Dierker, and of course Bob Bruce and Dick Farrell were there, and they were pretty reliable. But Dierker and Wilson and Cuellar were the three who really carried the staff.
Yeah, those, you build a staff around those guys, not telling what you could do today. What'd you do after you left the coaching?
Well, I stayed out a year, and then I went to the winter meetings, and I was just looking for a job back to baseball. I wanted to actually be a minor league pitching coach with the idea of maybe getting back to the major league pitching coach. But while I was at the meetings, the Global League was being formed. And,
mm-hmm. I remember that.
About that, but I was approached by Johnny Mize and Enid Slaughter, who were at the meeting, and they were both had affiliated themselves with this Global League, and they were telling me about it. Said that they needed a director of player personnel badly, and I was just out of baseball, and I knew a lot of the players who might be available to fringe players who had just gotten out. And why didn't I talk to the owner? So I talked to the owner, and he offered me, the Yankees had offered me a scouting job. And I was just about to accept it. In fact, I told them that I was going to see Lee McPhail the next day and probably accept the job. And talked to Dilbeck. I did. And Dilbeck offered me twice the salary that the Yankees had offered me, so I went with them. Which turned out to be a mistake. But it only lasted. We did put a league together, and we went to spring training, and I stayed with him until mid-April. But he was supposed to have had $40 million to put this league together, and it turned out that he had $300,000
or $400,000. Oh boy, that's a big difference.
More money as we went along, but it was a financial fiasco. So I resigned and came back in April. I had been in the insurance business, so I was pretty well established in the insurance business. So I just came back and went back in the insurance business, and that's where I stayed.
Well, you eventually scouted for the Yankees, didn't you?
No, I never did go.
Okay, I thought somewhere along the line I had heard that.
No, I think it came out at that time for some reason that I was going to scout for the Yankees, and I don't know, maybe it just kind of got around that I was, and people said, what's he doing? And they said he's scouting for the Yankees.
I
never did go with the
Yankees. I don't know if I read that or heard it in passing
I've seen it in a couple of magazines that
okay.
I scouted with the Yankees.
That must be where I came up with that.
I never did. Never did.
Well, you spent parts of 11 seasons in the majors. Is there one game that stands out as either a game that you remember for what you did or for something else that happened on the field?
Well, I would say probably the first game that I won in the big leagues was in Milwaukee. And of course, winning your first game, and it was a complete game. I pitched 10 innings to win it.
Uh-huh.
And that was the game I started against Burdette. And it was a Ladies' Day crowd on Thursday afternoon. It's the largest crowd they ever had in Milwaukee.
Wow.
Including a couple of World Series. I think after that at County Stadium, they might have had a larger crowd. But it was just a freak day. It was everybody came out that the Thursday afternoon. And that was my first win.
What was the score, to your call?
It was 2-1.
Oh, boy.
I had them shut out 1-0. Into the last of the ninth, and they tied it up. Aaron got an infield hit to tie the game. And then we got up in the 10th, and Wally Moon hit a triple. And anyway, with one out, somebody hit a fly ball to left field, and I think it was Solly Heenan.
Mm-hmm.
A fly ball to left, and Bobby Thompson was playing left, and it was kind of shallow. And Wally tagged up, and he should have been thrown out. He was just a very shallow left field. But Thompson's throw was up the line, 3 or 4 steps, and he was safe. And we went ahead 2-1, and then I got the first two guys out in the bottom of the 10th, and then there was an error, an infield hit. They had two men on anyway, and Adcock was up.
Wow.
Two outs, and he had a fly ball to Muzio in right field for the third out. 2-1.
Yeah, but that was exciting. You mentioned Aaron. Who was the best hitter or best player you saw?
Well, there was a lot of Aaron was certainly would be one of the top five. Always had a lot of respect for Roberto Clemente.
Oh, yes.
He was, he could hit any pitch on at any given time, low, high, anywhere.
Yeah, strike zone was the immediate county.
Yeah. And Ernie Banks had hit the ball awfully good against me, although I had later in my career with the Giants. And Houston, I had real good luck against him later on, but he hit a couple of home runs off me that I remember.
And yeah, he was a rookie when you were a rookie, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was just a young fellow. Of course, I think probably Mays was the best all-around player that I played with or against.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he amazing what he could do.
Yeah, he had everything.
Who was the best pitcher? That's tough, isn't it?
Yeah, there were a lot of good ones.
Yeah, every team, it seems, back then had one good pitcher anyhow, and like Milwaukee, many of them had two or three.
Yeah.
Now, heck, you're lucky to have two or three in the league, it seems like.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there was a lot of clubs had really had some solid pitching. Like you say, there was always one or two on every staff that were exceptional.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you save souvenirs from your career?
I've got some. I wasn't a real souvenir saver. I've got, from the Cardinals and Giants, I've got a lot of pictures that I had, some of them autographed by some of the players. Later in my career, I didn't save that much, but I've got some score books and some jackets and things that still have some of my career.
I guess back in your day, it wasn't thought about too much. Now, I guess the guys are holding on to everything they can get out of the ballpark.
Oh, yeah. And they're really, you know, going out of their way to get mementos and souvenirs.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as soon as a guy gets in the Hall of Fame or looks like he's going to be a Hall of Fame player, they're all going for it.
Yeah. Well, it's a business. It's not just a hobby like I guess it was.
A lot of money in it.
A whole lot.
I know Mantle's got 9 autographed bats by himself in a safe deposit box for his children.
No kidding.
And they all signed on the sweet spot. If he won't sign on the sweet spot now for even other players.
Somebody I spoke with just recently said that Mantle made, in signing autographs, he made something like $2.5 million last year, the year before last, something like that.
I can believe it.
Well, I guess I can too. On the market for the magazine this will appear in is, it's called Sports Collectors Digest, and that's what it's geared to. And we'll send you some copies of it. You'll look at the ads in there. I think you'll be amazed at what people are trying to sell, and what they're trying to get for it. And I guess you know they wouldn't advertise the prices if they weren't really getting it.
Oh, they probably are. I've had a couple of letters. I had a letter from an attorney back in New York or New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He said he'd fly out and buy memorabilia from me.
That same fella, evidently, and I don't know who it was right now, wrote somebody else that I interviewed here just a very, very short time ago.
He sent me 3 or 4 different letters.
Yeah, and he said he'd come to him and basically insinuated price was no object. You know, that's great. I'd like to be able to have money to spend like that. I don't know if I'd spend it that way or not. But.
Well, he must be, whatever he buys, he must sell for a profit.
Oh, you'd have to think.
I would think he would, unless he's got an unlimited amount of money and he wants to have a collection for himself. But, you know, if that was the case, I would think he would only go after certain people's jackets or whatever they wanted to get.
Well, I don't know. As a kid, I never wanted Mickey Mantle's autograph or Stan Musial's autograph. I wanted Jim Finnegan's autograph. I wanted Gordon Jones' autograph or something like that. You signed a program for me one time at Seal Stadium. I'm sure it's distinctly embedded in your memory. It was after the game, and I went down to the clubhouse locker room door and waited for the guys to come out, and you came out. I got 4 or 5 autographs. I thought that was really great. Where it is now, of course, is anybody's guess. It's a long time ago. Talked about you getting more fan mail. How much fan mail do you get now?
Oh, I probably get about 15 to 20 pieces a month, maybe sometimes more, sometimes less.
You find it at all seasonal, spring training or something, bring out more or something like that?
Yeah, I suppose as the baseball season starts, it's probably more. Although I do get them through the winter, too.
Do you always sign?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, does anybody try to take advantage of you?
Well, I get a lot of people who want you to fill out questionnaires or write a page or something on something, and sometimes if it's a questionnaire and the answers the questions are reasonable, well I'll write a little something on them. But no, I don't think so for the most part. Most of them have a stamped envelope and ask to sign, and sometimes they'll have specific things. You know, they just want you to sign your name or sign it to so and so or wishes or something. And which is all reasonable.
Yeah, Davey Williams, Giant. line second baseman when you came up. He said a fellow from New York sent him 58 by 10 of the identical pose and asked him to sign them all.
Oh, well, he said that, I would think that would be a little ridiculous.
He said he signed them and sent them back to him and said, please don't do this again. I think this is, you know, this. No matter how big a fan you were, you don't want 50 of the same picture. And he said it wasn't 3 or 4 months later, he got 50 more from the same fella.
Yeah, well, the guy's obviously selling it.
It had to be.
And, you know, I did get a request from Make-A-Wish Foundation for Kids, and they wanted me to sign 50 different pictures of the same idea.
Mm-hmm.
But these were to be given away to kids, and they sent, you know, a little article on it, and they offered to pay me for them. They sent me a pen, and they offered to pay me $1 a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I did sign it and send it back.
That's a little different, I think.
Other than that, I haven't had any multiple requests like that. You know, that were a little much, but. For the most part, I'll get a lot of them that have maybe 4 or 5 or 6 bubblegum cards in it, and maybe 5 or 6 little blank cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I generally will sign those all and send them back.
Do you have your baseball cards?
I've got a few, but my wife kind of keeps them, and most of them we've given away now. We really don't. I think she's got maybe 4 or 5 left in the drawer in there. But I think they were just ones that we collected over the years. A lot of times people will send them and say, send duplicates and say, you're welcome to keep one for yourself if you'd like.
Well, that's nice.
So we have kept those extra ones.
It's nice to have. I guess it's fun to see your picture on a baseball card. Any regrets from your career?
No. I wish that I hadn't turned my ankle in the spring training of 55. I think I was...
I'm sorry, I meant to ask you about that. You were hurt in 55. Doggone it, it's down here and I've gone by it. I'm sorry, let's go back to that. You were hurt. You were supposed to be either the 2 or 3 starter for the Cardinals in 55.
Yeah. Well, I was as the season started after my ankle finally healed to a point where I could pitch. I had started spring training, and I had, if I remember right, I think I had 11 or 12 scoreless innings in the exhibition game. And I was running in the outfield and stepped in a hole while I was running, and I turned my ankle pretty badly. And I couldn't run the rest of the spring training. And I just kind of walked around to get my ankle healed, and the season started, and I was supposed to start either the second or third game of the season at home, and as it was, I think I didn't start until about a week into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I wasn't in shape, and I had a pretty good 3 or 4 innings. About the 5th inning, I ran out of gas and got knocked out and left the game. And it went on like that. I finally won a game. I beat Pittsburgh 4-1 or 3-1. 3-1. 3 or 4-1. And went almost a complete game. I think I was taken out in the 9th inning with 1 or 2 outs. And won that game. But other than that, I think it was 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
Finally went into the bullpen, and then I was sent down in July, I believe, to Omaha. But the whole problem was that I never really got in good shape, because that ankle bothered me even after I probably shouldn't have pitched until maybe 3 or 4 weeks into the season. And if it was like it is now, where I'd have gone to a rehab or been able to go and pitch myself into shape instead of having to pitch myself into shape against major league competition.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
It would have been, I think, a different story. My control wasn't as sharp as it should have been, because my ankle wasn't strong enough. I wasn't, looking back, I know that I wasn't landing properly, and I was getting a lot of balls up in the strike zone where I had to keep the ball low in the strike zone.
Well, the Cardinals' pitching was not such that it could afford the luxury of
waiting.
Yeah.
At that time, if you were one of the four starters, well, you know, you were expected to pitch every fifth day.
Yeah.
And that's the way, you know, that's the way it should be, I would think, especially at that time. And so I certainly had they stayed with me, and I think I must have gotten 10 or 12 starts.
I think you had nine starts. Yeah. Then you went to the bullpen.
And I went to the bullpen. But that, I think that was probably the point that I would like to have changed, because I was having an outstanding spring and I was throwing the ball real good. And I really felt like I was going to pick right up where I left off in 54. In fact, I had in the exhibition games up to that point.
Well, I think it was the Sporting News, and I'm not sure where now, but it must have been because I read it faithfully. They were extolling your virtues greatly early in spring.
Yeah, I was having a strong, very strong spring, and I was being touted as going to be Addicks and myself and Brooks Lawrence and Pujols.